Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Good Sunday morning to you. It's a great morning if you're a Gopher football fan. What a win yesterday, grinding out a win. We'll talk about that as well as a whole host of other topics. Matthew Collar joins me today as Pete is gallivanting off in the world. Where is he again? Where did he go? He went to France, didn't he?
France.
He's in France.
He's there for the Olympics.
He's a little late. A little late. Matthew, good morning.
What's up?
Good to have you. What's up, Tiger? How are you?
I am doing well. I'm doing well.
We're getting ready to do the show about 20 minutes ago, and Blois is on the air here. Can I embarrass you?
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, good. Yeah. Blois is on the air, and Blois is in the midst of a very serious conversation. I think it was with Steve Simon at that time. And Matt doesn't know as he's walking down the hall, and he runs in, and he goes, "What's up, Tiger?" Oh, I'll be on the air. That was great.
No big deal. We have an on-air light right in the hallway there, by the way.
But Blois is always doing this show from home.
Yes, he is remote, yeah.
Not ever here. So I've been in on a number of Sundays. I always walk in and there's nobody here except for the producer and Najarian. I have never done a show with Najarian in person because he's usually in Florida vibing on the beach or something.
And sending pictures of it too. I'm surprised we haven't gotten any Paris pictures
yet. You could see why I didn't think. And plus, because he was doing a phone interview, I didn't hear anything. So if I had walked up and he was talking, of course. I would have heard it.
The real issue here is, obviously, You had nobody with you because you have a key fob to get in the building.
I do, yeah.
Which I don't have a key fob to get in the building. So I had to have someone come down. Al Shock was nice enough to come down and get me.
But don't you usually do the show remote as well?
I do. So, but boy, I'll tell you what, Brad Lane, it would be wonderful to have a key fob to be able to get a building. I almost got stuck in the elevator this morning.
This feels like an ego thing more than 100%. It is like a necessary thing.
Yeah, it's probably so.
But I have a key fob, and I'd like to show it
to you. Well, you want to show me your right – that's here. A lovely key fob.
There it is. Isn't it great?
It really is.
Gets
nice.
Gets me in the building, up on
up
the elevator.
Up here and able to burst into the studio. What's up, Tiger? That was great.
There are – well, what went through my head was there are many worse things I could have said to you.
Yes,
and
have said to me at multiple, many, many times. You and I, obviously, we go back a long ways. We've known each other for many, many years now.
Since 2016.
Is it 2016?
Yeah, that's when I moved here.
So that it's been that long. So I'm excited to have you here today. And we'll talk Vikings, obviously, quite a bit in our second hour because they have a huge game tonight, Sunday Night Football, the Indianapolis Colts. But we're going to start with Gopher football yesterday. And what I think is one of the biggest wins, at least in recent memory, not so much because Illinois was the 24th ranked team in the country, but because of a couple things. One, they had to do it on the road. Two, I didn't think it was the best game that they'd ever played. And three, it's not a secret. Brett Bielema has had PJ Fleck's number. He was 10-0 coming into this game, dating back to Wisconsin. I think this is a huge win. How much did you catch the whole game?
I did.
Okay. So we talked about this a little bit last week, and your expertise here is great because the balance between passing and running and being able to be, somewhat, malleable in your game plan, I think is something that in the past PJ Fleck has been accused of not having. This year, I feel like there's been more of that where, okay, we're going to run today. They're taking away the run. Okay, we're going to pass today. Yesterday, I felt like it was one of the first times that they were able to really do both with consistency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that in recent years, it's been really quite a while. They just have had no passing attack that scared anybody.
Yeah.
And it seemed like the PJ Fleck was actually scared to throw the ball at times. And we were all saying, is it the quarterback? Is it PJ Fleck's system? Is it his offense? It didn't look all that innovative and up to date in recent years. And I think that he did assess that, and it does look a little bit better. But oftentimes what this comes down to is, do you have a dude who could throw the ball? Max Brosberg could throw the ball and Daniel Jackson could catch it.
Yep.
That catch that he made down the sideline where he kind of rope-a-doped the corner and slowed down and then let it drop in the breadbasket.
That's big time.
That was like a Randy Moss move.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Moss used to do the same thing. It kind of looked like he was slowing up and the corner just goes, oh, okay, the ball's not coming here. And then he looks up and grabs it. Jackson's made a ton of great catches. They have a connection there where they can move the ball through the air. Brosberg can throw it. And the other thing is, too, that I feel like there's a little more on the resilient side to this team than there has been in the past. And that might just be connected to having a quarterback who can do stuff. But when they did the fake punt, and I get it because everybody ran away and turned their back except one guy, but it's also 4th and 12 and it's also a punter. So I'm not really sure that that's the play you wanted. But Illinois goes down and scores. And that is usually the ball game. That normally in Gophers' recent history has been, all right, game over. There's the big mess up that is going to cause them to lose and disappoint, lose by one score. And Brosmer comes out next drive, goes down and scores, and they take the lead. And they were able to run very effectively. They've got a good offensive line again. They usually do. But I just thought that was the resilience that they haven't shown in the past, where when they have that bad moment, it's kind of been over because they don't have the horses to make up for it, but now they actually do. And I also thought that this was a kind of a prove it game to me for the Gophers. Mm-hmm. Okay, you beat UCLA. Congratulations.
Yeah, so did everybody else.
In front of 9 of your best friends or whatever out there in that game, right? And USC, that win doesn't look quite as exciting as it once did. But this was more of a, like, I respect Bielema. I respect their quarterback. I respect their team. And to beat them in their place, it was impressive. That is one of the most impressive wins we've seen from the Gophers in a long time.
Daniel Jackson, and I watched, you brought up that play, and I remember thinking, my goodness, like that is such a high-level wide receiver play. And it makes me think that he's 6 foot, 195 pounds. I know the NFL is a little different now. If he is 6'3 or 6'4, he's a legit prospect, right? I mean, he's granted, he's probably still, I think so. He's got some wheels, but he's 6 foot. You know, it's tough to make it in the NFL and a wide receiver at 6 foot. If this guy's 3 inches taller, we're talking about him in the draft next year. Don't you think?
Maybe.
Maybe not. Maybe.
It's hard with
you
the
NFL. You can say, you can disagree with me. It's okay.
It's hard with the NFL. Well, I don't know what the draft analysts think of him. I just know how good Tyler Johnson was at this level, and he's sort of barely hung on to an NFL career. And even Rashad Bateman was so dominant and has become a good receiver, but not running over people. Yeah, you know, I think with college, we just always have this need to talk about people as prospects. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we need to do that with him, but he tracks the ball extremely well.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do. Like, he runs routes well, but he really tracks the football. So when you throw it up to him, he's going to go get it. And having that weapon for the Gophers is another thing that's been kind of missing since Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman. And there's, I'm sure, a connection there. Having someone who could throw it, having someone who could catch it.
Yeah.
Imagine in football, it's a big deal. But I think that PJ really needed this to find Brosmer, to find a quarterback who can do the things he wants to do, because did we not all have the thought last year, can we at least make this entertaining?
Yeah.
Because, okay, you win 5 or 6 games a year, but it's also making my eyeballs bleed. At least like this year, I have said, I want to tune in to watch Gopher football. I mean, the Ohio State and Penn State game was going on yesterday, and I'm watching both.
Yeah.
But I was leaning toward watching more of the Gopher game.
Yeah.
And that's something that I would not have said to you a year or 2 years ago.
No, this is a lot more fun. And honestly, it makes me think back to the 2019 season when they went 11-2. They go into Penn State. Penn State comes here and they win. And they, unfortunately, and I was at the game when they lost to Iowa, which was a super buzzkill. But it, naturally now the predictions are there between this team and that team. It sounds crazy to say, but I still have to see a little bit more from this team because if you look back at some of the wins in 2019, I mean, they were crushing guys. You know, granted, Bielema wasn't in Illinois at the time, but they hung 40 on Illinois. You know, they put 34 up on Nebraska. They put 42 up, 42-7 on Rutgers, who's going to come in this weekend. 50 they put up on Maryland. So both teams, I think, are really good. And I'd love to hear what our listeners say as well on the stylesfinancial.com talking text line. 651-461-9226. Which team is better, the 2019 team or the 2024 team? Because we're getting there. I still think the 2019 team overall is better. They had Tyler Johnson. He was outstanding. They had Muhammad Ibrahim, who was an absolute workhorse. But I think you're upgraded at the quarterback position with Max Brosmer, who went for, you know, 200 yards again yesterday and has stayed upright for a good portion of the season, which means a lot. And I think that they have a better defense. I mean, we saw it yesterday, even with Ja Joyner, you know, seeing limited time. And don't get me started on how late he played into the game the week before, because my head wanted to explode. Why was he still in there? But I still think this team has to show me a little bit more. I think the 19 team is still better now. What do you think?
Oh, I think the 19 team was better, and Antoine Winfield Jr. being a part of that. I mean, mm-hmm. That is, when we talk about the draft, that's a regret for the Vikings.
That they didn't grab him.
Yes. But that's also one of the best players in the entire NFL right now. And you had him on your college team. And even though I just said Bateman is good, not great in the NFL, still he's a starting quality NFL wide receiver. Tyler Johnson's still in the league. I don't think they have the multitude of weapons offensively. And even though Brosmer, I believe, is a better overall quarterback than Tanner Morgan, I think Morgan was better that year. Like that, I mean, he was just throwing it up to his guys and having them catch it. But in terms of statistically, what he was able to do that year is probably one of the top, five quarterback seasons in Gopher history.
We talked about this last week, or other than like Adam Weber.
Yeah.
The year that they, I think they had beaten Iowa and they ripped the goalpost down. So
that one's going to be tough to top, I think, 2019. I think this team plays a little bit, like you said, closer games and has a high entertainment value. But what yesterday was for me was, you have my attention, Gophers. And going into this season, when we think about what people thought and where people thought they were going to be, like, oh man, all these teams are going to come into the Big Ten and the Gophers are going to melt. And really, they should have had a shot to win against Michigan.
They should have.
Well,
there's two more wins on the schedule that should be theirs. And I'll die on that hill that I know that they're 6-3, but they really are more of an 8-1 team at this point. Or let's just say 7-2.
Even if they split those two where they kind of got screwed. Yeah. But I think overall, just can you tune in on a Saturday and really enjoy Gophers football? It's been a while.
A long time.
So this was important, I think, for PJ Fleck to have this season.
Yeah, I agree. We'll talk more Gophers at the bottom of the hour and continue to take your calls and texts on this. 651-461-9226. Where does this team rank for you in terms of playing, you know, against the 2019 team? Got a couple of texts already. We'll hit those again at the bottom of the hour. We're going to pause, take a break, come back. We'll talk a little Wild hockey. Kevin Gorg from, what's it called now? FanDuel Sports Network. That's right. FanDuel Sports Network. Kevin Gorg's going to join us next. We'll talk Wild hockey. You're listening to The Huddle. Into the StylesFinancial.com talking text line. You are what your record is. 2019 Gophers at 11-2 are far better than the 2024 team. 6-3 with a loss coming up to Penn State, as those boys are tough. I don't know. We'll see.
I think it's a better team. 2019 is a better team than this, but that doesn't mean that this isn't a good team.
Yeah.
Double negative. Sorry.
Let's just not go to the Pinstripe Bowl. That would be wonderful. Or the Quick Lane. No, Quick Lane's the one that the Gophers always go to. No more Quick Lane Bowl, please.
Can't wait for bowl season.
Gosh, it's best. You know who else is the best? Kevin Gorg joining us now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline from FanDuel Sports North. KG, we're going to talk a little Wild hockey here. So before we get into Friday's game, which I'd like to chat about, I want to ask you first about going back to Pittsburgh and Marc-Andre Fleury. How special was that night? Because we saw, I think, the most emotion we'll ever see out of Marc-Andre and kind of recognizing that this is his last hurrah, his farewell. What was the emotion like in the building and in the locker room as they played this one?
Yeah, this was a special night. I've been doing this for almost two decades, and this is for certain one of the top five game memories I'll take with me. And throughout the town all week long, there was a buzz. Even at the hotel, there were dozens and dozens and dozens of people when our buses got to the hotel in Pittsburgh looking for pictures and autographs. And he's such a cordial guy. You know, he loves, as we all know, but he loves to give back. And the day before at practice, something I'll never forget, with the two rinks there, the Penguins had finished their practice. The Wild were on rink number two, went through their 45-minute day before game practice. We get done, and we're walking back where the Wild have to change in the main part of the rink. And there's a youth hockey team on the ice. And Marc-Andre Fleury notices that the kids are all wide-eyed when he's walking by in his gear. What does he do? He opens up the gate, and he goes out there and spends 10 minutes at practice going through the drills with this youth hockey team. It was remarkable. Watching him enter the arena, both for morning skate and the game, when he's embracing some of the folks that work security around the rink that still remember his 13 years in Pittsburgh, and just knowing how nervous and anxious he was about the game, because he admitted, we talked to him the day before, that he had not played very well in that building as a visitor. And then to see the game play out the way it did, where he had a very impactful game, he played great. And the crowd, guys, I've never seen like it. They were openly cheering for everything he did against their team. And this is Pittsburgh. This is a hardcore hockey fan base that's won Stanley Cups. It was a really magical night.
Kevin, I don't think that anybody ever expects a team to get off to this good of a start, just ever, even if you're a really good team. What do you attribute it to? I'll give you my theory. I like the chemistry of this team and the fact that they have a lot of veterans and young players that seem to be gelling together. But what do you attribute it most to?
Well, Pete, you're spot on. Hockey is such a game of chemistry where there has to be that balance away from the rink, whether it's in the locker room or with all the travel they've been doing. They get along great. They really have fun together. But I go back to training camp, and you know, the Wild learned the hard way last year that you can't earn a playoff spot in the first month of the year, but you can lose it. And they certainly did. It cost their coach, Dean Evason, his job. And I think as a group, they were motivated to get off to a better start. And then when the schedule came out and you saw that they were home for the first two games and basically gone the entire rest of October, it opened everybody's eyes. And so John Hines and that coaching staff put them through a really hard training camp. Now, I don't know. I've never lived as a player through a training camp, but when I talk to Ryan Carter and Wes Walls, the guys on our broadcast, and they're sitting there at training camp going, holy cow, this is impressive. So that was the tone that was set. Like, we are going to get off to a good start. We're going to face adversity, and we're going to overcome it. And I think the work they put in before the season started is starting to pay off, because they're winning different ways. They're playing as a group. So different nights, different players are stepping up. And listen, if you're going to win in this league, two things have to happen. You got to get goaltending, and your star players have to carry you. And they've had both of those things, and I'm talking big time when it comes to star power.
Kevin Gorg joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. KG, the camp looked different. There's a couple of guys, and as you look, kind of look down the scoring here, obviously Kirill Kaprizov's going to get his points. But from the eye test to me, Matt Zuccarello, clearly I think his numbers are a little better to start the season. But the guy that has jumped off the ice to me every time I've watched him as looking completely different to me is Marco Rossi. He's playing with Kirill and he's playing with Zucky. So that's, at least he was Friday. That was a great line. But the kid just looks different to me. He's looked like he's made a jump, both the way he's commanding the ice, the way he skates. To you, does he look like he's a different player this year?
He looks more confident. I mean, I think physically he's the same guy, and he talked about the regiment two summers ago where he got a little bigger and a little stronger. I think it was an eye-opener when he first got to the Wild with how physical this league can be, especially if you're a centerman who's going to play down low in both the offensive and defensive zones. But he's got his mojo, Schwartzy. To your point, there's an edge to his game now. He's going to the net. He's learning how to play off of those two guys. And the one thing you knew about Rossi when the Wild drafted him, when you watched him play leading up to his time in the NHL, is this kid's a creative hockey player. And now he's playing with two guys that are as creative as any two in the National Hockey League. And he's making it clear he's assertive on the ice. So it's not just the Kaprizov-Zuccarello give-and-go game. He's involved in the offense. And I think he's got a little swagger to himself because he feels like he brings out their best. And talking with Marco a couple different times in the season, he's a real quiet kid, but he's a confident kid. And I think right now you're seeing the best of what he can bring to the table, because it takes a unique player to play off of those two guys. And he absolutely has the skill set to do it.
What's Zuccarello doing differently? I mean, through 10 games last year, he had like 2 goals. This year he's got 5. He's definitely more of a command, I think, on the offensive side of the ice. What are you seeing different out of him?
He's just gotten off to a better start. Yeah. You know, for a veteran player last year, I think he got really frustrated. Remember, they broke him and Kirill up, and it was hard for him to find that magic with anybody else. And I'm not saying he could only play with Kirill, but John Hines and that coaching staff made a commitment to saying at the start of training camp, we don't know a lot about how this team's going to look, but we do know those two guys are going to play together. And it seemed to give him some wings. And Zuccarello had a great camp, a couple of good preseason games, and he and Kirill have hit the ground, and they have been flying. And they love playing with each other. Their friendship is, it's been documented. It's terrific. The cool part is now you're seeing some of Kirill and Zuki's habits rub off on some of the younger players. And I'll give you an example. A couple of days ago, we wrapped up with practice, and we were shooting some stuff for some of our broadcasts here this week. So it was 40 minutes after practice was over. And there's Rossi, and there's Boldy, and some of the younger players that are the next wave in this organization out there working on these skill games with Kirill and Zuki, who always stay after practice and do all these strange shooting and passing drills on their own. And then that wrapped up, and Boldy and Kaprizov go over. And, Dave, I know you know the area at Tria Rink where all the fans congregate. It was an open practice. And they sat down there for another 20 minutes and took pictures and signed autographs for all the kids. This is Boldy and Kaprizov, your two biggest names outside of Marc-Andre Fleury, sitting there now an hour after practice, putting that time in for the fans. Going back to what Pete said about the chemistry and the tone that this team has set, it's all through that locker room. And the ripple effects of having great leaders like, again, we talked about Marc-Andre Fleury, like a Jared Spurgeon, like a Marcus Foligno, they have set the tone. This is the way we're going to do things. And I think the team right now all feels like they're on the same page.
Kevin, we really should have told you that Pete is actually off today. This is Matthew Collard that asked you the chemistry question, but we didn't mention that to you. That's not your fault. But I am complimented that you think I sound like Pete Najarian.
You do sound like Pete.
I must have been really intense when I was coming with that question. I want to ask you about Brock Faber, though, because he gets the contract in the offseason. That's a big discussion. Like, hey, it's only been 1 year. He's got the big, 8-year contract. And yet it seems like he's come out of the gate very strong, especially offensively so far. I guess, how do you feel like he's dealt with the expectations that go along with something like a contract like that?
Well, Matthew, I got to tell you, I think we keep waiting for the other shoot a drop with Brock Faber, and I don't think it's going to happen. When he made his very first impression, like he had just finished up both a very emotional and energetic but also heartbreaking weekend with the Golden Gophers 2 years ago in the Frozen Four. They get beat in that overtime game, and he shows up a day later, and here's this college kid trying to make the move to the NHL. And I think the Wild just figured they'd throw him a couple of games at the end of the regular season, let him watch the playoffs, and then that next training camp, try to get him up to speed with playing NHL hockey. I'll never forget it because Dean Evason, after he finishes his normal media work, John Hines does the same thing. We have this thing called the cone where he'll talk to the broadcasters. And after a couple of games, his eyes got wide and said, this kid's far better than any of us expected him to be. Brock Faber went in, played great those last couple of games, was awesome in the playoffs, looked like their best defenseman in that series against Dallas. And then came last year, and last year was a hard year for everybody within this team and all the injuries and all the setbacks and the coach getting fired. And there's Brock Faber playing in all 82 games, and I know for a fact played through a couple of serious injuries and was their best defenseman. So here comes, okay, now we've had this incredible rookie year. We nearly won the Calder. We always hear about the sophomore slump and all these sports, and he's come back and he's been a better player. And as recent as a couple nights ago, scored that huge goal, was +3. He plays big minutes. He plays physical. And they put him out there against the opposition's best every single night. And the best part of Brock Faber isn't what he does on the ice. It's the kid that he is behind the scenes. Down to earth, not one bit of cockiness, loves the game, loves being a part of it, loves being on a team. Like, this kid is a dream. So you can wait for the shoe to drop all you want with this kid. I don't think it's going to happen in the Wild. I look back at that trade when Kevin Fiala was a guy they could not afford, and the whole league knew the Wild couldn't fit him under the cap. And they went to the Kings, and not only did they get Brock Faber, but they also got a first-round draft pick. That has to be the best move in the history of this organization. And Brock Faber continues to pay that back. Unbelievable.
It was a great move and ended up being the one I think that everyone forgets about Fiala now, because it's like, hey, listen, if you had a choice, you could have Fiala on the after his good season or take Brock Faber on the way up. I think 10 out of 10 would tell you that it's Brock Faber. KG, thanks. Always appreciate you. We will see you today, right? You're on the broadcast this afternoon?
Yeah, 4:30. For local sports fans, it's a great doubleheader. We come out at 4:30, Wild and Maple Leafs, so Austin Matthews is in town. And then right after our broadcast, we can slide over to the Vikings and the Colts on
Sunday
Night Football. Should be a lot of fun.
I'm going to be on my couch. I know where I'm going to be today. Thanks, buddy. Always good to talk to you.
Take care, boys.
KG, Kevin Gorg from FanDuel Sports FanDuel Sports Network. Excuse me. We'll take a quick break.
Wait, should I do the rest of the show as Pete?
Could you?
Should I just? What I should have done is just pretend to be Pete the whole day?
You need to cut the sleeves off your hoodie.
Yeah.
And you need to grow your hair out about 12 inches.
I remember when I was playing linebacker in the 80s, I tried to tackle Walter Payton. And, you know, I know people who know Walter Payton, and he's a great guy.
Oh, Pete, if you're listening.
Pete's listening, right?
I miss you, buddy.
Hi, Pete.
We love you. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. You listen to the Huddle. Pete and Dave.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling very wanted.
Someone said today. Kevin Gorg sounds more like Pete than you do.
I think Kevin Gorg would
It was a short question. No one told Kevin
no,
that
it wasn't
he
his
was
fault.
Out.
No, I love Kevin. We should have. That's on me. I should have said it was me and Matt today.
It's National Blame Dave Schwartz Day.
Actually, technically, it should be on the producer to let him know who he's on with, right?
Who's that?
I mean, is that how this goes?
Who's that?
Yeah. All right, Josh.
Technically, I didn't have KG's number until
you know, we could all be better. That's we could all be better.
Change your best.
Well, history was made, you guys, on Thursday night in the New York Jets did the impossible. They won a game with Aaron Rodgers for the first time in 6 weeks, despite a fumble at the goal line with a premature drop of the football and numerous penalties. The Jets did pull off a victory. Matthew Coller, I will start with you for this one. Is the Aaron Rodgers era still alive and well?
I mean, I think it's alive in the way that they could make the number 7 seed in the playoffs because they have Devontae Adams now. Their defense is really good. As the Vikings saw, it was not a fluke that their defense gave Sam Darnold the most problems of any defense so far this year. But is that a legitimate playoff contender? Could go deep in the postseason? Could win the Super Bowl? No. And what they needed, too, to win that game is one of the most obscene catches that has ever been made in NFL history.
It's good.
They needed that in order to win the game. I think that they're a middling team. They're a 500 type of team that's fallen behind and will probably win a few more games, but I don't think we'll be talking about him in February, hopefully.
Yeah. Dave.
He's garbage. I mean, it's just he's not good anymore.
Yeah.
His completion percentage is some of the lowest in his career. I'm looking at it right now. He's completing 62% of his passes. He's got 15 touchdowns to 7 interceptions. That's a horrible ratio. He didn't, and granted, he didn't have maybe the guys to throw to, but he's just not the same Aaron Rodgers
anymore. No, he's definitely not the same.
He needs to be done.
He looked like he was having some fun when they were winning the other night, but the biggest thing with Rodgers is that every time things go wrong, he has
someone else's
a
fault.
Hissy fit.
Yep.
And over a really long season, I just feel like that's already started to wear on people. They got to win, but it has very 2010 Vikings vibes of just no one is actually enjoying this.
That was interesting. And he's on a 2-year deal, right? This is the last. Is it a 2-year
deal? I would imagine he's going to retire after this.
If you ask Rodgers, though, it's the receiver's
fault.
We
also always thought that Brett Favre was going to retire, too. That's true. Every year.
Dave, the Minnesota Wild, they won a huge game on Tuesday night in Pittsburgh, and then they also won on Friday against the Lightning. And celebrated was the one. We talked about it a little bit last segment, but Marc-Andre Fleury in what was then Mallon Arena, now is PPG Paints Arena, I think. Is he the greatest goaltender of all time?
Oh, boy. Of all time?
Stats-wise, he's second, but like...
He's up there. I don't know who's first, but I think of guys like
Brodeur.
Brodeur is first.
Yep.
I mean, you got Brodeur. You've got Mike Richter. You've got, I'm just naming them off. You've got, oh, who else am I? Ed Belfour. I mean, guys who are, that Dominic Hasek, I think you could put up there too. Guys who literally take over. And Marc-Andre Fleury is incredibly successful. Mm-hmm. And he's a phenomenal goaltender. He's a better human being. But Marc-Andre Fleury plays in a style of goalie that's sometimes boom or bust. And he's gotten, I think, better the last few years in the way he plays. He plays a little bit more compact and making, you know, playing his angles as opposed to wild, you know. Fleury could make these incredible saves that were always highlight saves, you know, because he would throw himself all over the place. But that's not sustainable long term. He in my mind, he's top five. 100%, he's top five. Yes, Texter says Patrick Waugh. I agree, and he's up there as well. I would put him top five for sure.
Couple,
I don't know he's the best.
Couple things too to add with that. 140 games, roughly short of Brodeur as far as wins, mm-hmm. Second, and then 3 Stanley Cups in 13 seasons. And I might add. A lot of those 3 Pittsburgh
those
Cups
Pittsburgh
are majorly due to his goaltending.
But they also had Sidney Crosby, correct. Evgeny Malkin, and so on and so forth. So he had some amazing guys in front of him, too. I'm not trying to take anything away from him.
I don't think he's a top five all time.
You don't think so?
I think that's really aggressive. I mean, I think he's a Hockey Hall of Famer, and he's a very, very good goaltender, but I don't think it quite raises to the level of being a Dominic Hasek, a Patrick Waugh, Marty Brodeur. Mm-hmm. I don't even think of the era he is top five. I mean, because you have Luongo, you have Henrik Lundqvist. Some people might put Jonathan Quick in there.
Did Luongo even win a cup? He didn't win a cup, did he?
I'm not evaluating it that way if I'm doing like top five. I mean, yeah, well, cup, but the guy had played with Sidney Crosby. I mean, he was in game 7 of a Stanley Cup final against Boston. But
it's a good argument. It's statistics versus actual play. Like what makes you, because Dominic Hasek, I'll say statistically, I don't know if he was the most dominant, but like when they won the cup, he won it for them.
But he was
incredible.
He was the most statistically dominant Hasek was. If you look at him in save percentage versus the rest of the era at that time, he was absolutely dominating.
Was that Buffalo against Dallas? Was that the one where?
Yeah, let's not discuss
they
that.
They cheated? Okay.
The foot was in the crease. Skate was in the crease.
Mr. Caller, this past week we learned that Bob Costas, after 44 years in the booth, is hanging up the headset. When you think of Bob Costas, what do you think of?
I think of a fly ball to right field over the head of Tony Tarasco and Jeffrey Mayer leaning over and pulling the ball in 1996. What happens now? Like that's what I think of him in the 90s of doing that World Series and then the one with Cleveland and Florida and the end of that into the deep into the night with what Charles Nagy coming in to pitch and all that. The ground ball to Tony Fernandez that he can't field. I think it was Tony Fernandez, right? So he was in the 90s in those World Series. He was so excellent. I also kind of think of his pretentious commentary.
Yeah, I mean, he knows his excuse me. He knows who he is and does, and he knows that he can say what he wanted to say. What I think of with Costas is his interview with Vince McMahon when Vince McMahon was about ready to pop his head like a pimple. I mean, it was, and I'll say this: to have the you know what's to sit there with a guy as large as Vince McMahon, and Costas is small. He's not a big guy. To have the gall to sit there and sit in knowing that, number one, I'll be viral forever. Number two, this guy could legitimately kill me if he wants to, because Vince is a big guy.
Yeah.
I give him all the credit in the world for asking the questions that the way he wanted to ask them, and I thought it was fair, but it was gutsy. That's what I always think of.
I think of him also for, and I don't recall the exact issue, commentary maybe on concussions or something else like that, trying to hold the NFL accountable for that. Major League Baseball with steroids. I'm joking about the pretentious thing. I think that he did have lines in the sand that were drawn of, I am going to ask questions or I am going to make statements that might not make these leagues happy, but I think it's the right thing to do. That's kind of what he became later to my introduction to Bob Costas was entirely those 90s World Series. Mm. So certainly one of the great broadcasters of all time.
Yep.
We'll do one last quick one here. As you guys know, a big star is returning tonight at the good old U.S. Bank Stadium. Caller, we'll start with you. Actually, Dave, we'll start with you since I started with Caller for the last one. How much of a factor do you see T.J. Hockenson returning as far as in this matchup against the Colts? How much does it change things?
I mean, it's tough because I think the Johnny Munt and who's the other tight end?
Josh Oliver
have done a nice job. I mean, they've made some key catches. But, I mean, if T.J. Hockenson's truly, truly 100% healthy and ready to go, I mean, he's your wide receiver. He's technically your receiver two or three, I think, at this
point.
Yeah,
two, I would say.
Because he's so good. So it gives you – it's a huge edge in the passing game, not just because he can catch, but because now from a defensive side, you have to account for him, which should mm-hmm. open things up for others.
The biggest thing is that Sam Darnold is taking sacks on 10% of his dropbacks, which is way too many. Mm-hmm. And I think what T.J. Hockenson – gives him is an outlet that's always there. We saw Kirk use T.J. Hockenson this way. Detroit used him this way, that you can throw a 3-yard pass to Hockenson and he turns it into a 10-yard pass because he's good after the catch. He's open all the time underneath. He finds zones. He's really is kind of a wide receiver for them because he can line up in the slot, line up outside. He is a very versatile weapon. There's a reason they made him the highest paid tight end in the league last summer. He's that good. And I think the offense has missed him quite a bit for kind of the easy bucket type of stuff or easy button type of stuff.
Kirk loved those 3-yard outs to Hockenson, especially there when it's go. A third fourth and 25. Eight.
We won't forget about the check pass at the end of the season.
Check down Charlie. That was him. All right.
That's it for pass
break. Take a quick break. We'll wrap up hour number one. You're listening to The Huddle. Nope, my mic's not. Am I on now? A little slow there, Josh. Do I need a key fob to turn my mic on too?
Way to be self-sufficient. Pete turns his mic on. Just so.
The StylesFinancial.com talk and text line lighting up here. Good comparison between this year and 2019 for the Gophers. I was entertained both years, but I give the slight edge to this year, and it is definitely more surprising. It's taken them a little while longer to find their groove, but they don't really have a weakness. And Brosmer is the best quarterback in my lifetime. How old is this person?
I mean, probably there's not a lot to choose from.
No, he's good. I
don't even think
too.
That's a ludicrous statement.
You don't think it is?
No, because, there's just not a lot to
there
talk
isn't.
About.
There isn't.
He's is he actually better as a football player than Morgan? Like, Morgan's season in 2019.
I think he's better than
Morgan. I think he's a better football player.
Yeah, I think he can truly. He's more. Morgan got no quarterback ever wants to be called a game manager, right? But that's exactly what he was. It's like, just keep the chains moving so our defense can rest and get you back on the field. A couple others. Do we have time, Josh? There's the clock. I got the clock right there.
Oh, yeah, we got time.
All right, good. Whenever I think of Bob Costas, we spoke about Bob Costas last segment. Whenever I think of Bob Costas, I think of him telling the story of an Olympic athlete while sitting in front of a fireplace in a lodge. During the Winter Games, he was at best at those big events, but particularly the Olympics, he was.
But remember his eye thing that he had during
there.
The Olympics?
Yeah. That was a huge to-do.
The leaky eyeball.
He had pink eye.
I had an intern when I was working radio in Buffalo who went for Halloween as Bob Costas with the eye. So she made this big crusty thing.
I felt listen, full disclosure, I'm not the biggest Bob Costas fan for some reasons that I don't need to go into. I felt really badly for him during those games because it sets home the point that television journalists have both the easiest job and the toughest job, right? You're talking about sports journalists, I should say. You're talking about sports. It's fun. It's not that hard. But you're also on display for the whole world. Mm-hmm. I mean, this happens to any of us. It happens to people. Like, you get pink eye, it's no big deal. This guy had to live it out in front of millions and the internet. It's horrible.
Oh, also I should mention with Costas, it didn't come to mind at first, but the NBA on NBC is going to come back. And his intros to those Jordan-era games, it is a culmination to team. You know, they would just have the music behind, and you'd have Costas' voice.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
I I think he was really good at setting the stage for things.
All right. We'll talk more next hour. You're listening to The Huddle. We'll be right back.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.